Nandini, my co-founder, she started a campaign in 2016 called Sleeping Giants, and they let advertisers know when their ads were on Breitbart. Within 3 months, 4,000 advertisers had publicly said, thank you for letting us know. We do not want to be here. We are going to block Breitbart from our ad campaigns. And then 31 of Breitbart's 35 ad exchanges dropped them.
We've spoken to some people who espouse very different beliefs to us. One of those was surprisingly when we were on a road trip with a complete stranger who we met through this podcast. And we went on a road trip from Washington, D.C. to essentially Massachusetts. And on the way, we stopped in Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania, which I didn't know, I honestly don't really know much about Pennsylvania or the history, but, you know, we've all learned about Gettysburg and the Gettysburg Address and all that sort of stuff. And we entered the town of Gettysburg, and I found it so interesting because I had never been there before. What I realized was the town was so divided still. Like, one street was, like, LGBTQ, Black Lives Matter flags, and the other street was, like, Confederate flags held, like, and waved unironically. And on the intersection of those two streets, there was a group of around six guys with, like, shaved heads, and they looked like they were from, like, the 1940s. I was like, this is kind of weird. And what made it even weirder was they were all wearing capes. I was like, all right, maybe this is a stylistic
In like, 100-degree heat, it was odd.
And long story short, as people who you know, value conversation, we get into a conversation with them, and we end up learning that they're part of, like, this very, like, what I would consider alt-right, like, religious, well, how would you even, like, describe it, Ash? I don't know.
Yeah, like, super, super Christian, but takes it to a super far extreme, and, like, live, die, eat by it. Also, their founding member was an anti-Semite, and, like, a whole litany of other things. They kind of looked like matadors, honestly. That's sort of the image I think about when we were chatting with them. I was like, dude, what are y'all doing? Just holding up signs like, honk if you hate Cuba. Oof. I was like, okay, you got a story. Nothing that ever got distributed, of course, but it was it was an odd experience to say the least, especially in a location like that. It's just like, history has not changed.
But we get into a conversation. We get into a conversation with these few guys, and one guy in particular was willing to sort of have a conversation with us. And what I realized is, like, yeah, this guy is definitely a little bit odd in his perspective of life, but it definitely is rooted in his cultural background. Like, as a dude who grew up in Wisconsin, maybe not having as much exposure to what's out there as somebody who grew up on the coast or just was, like, maybe had more education, whatever it may be. I think that all sort of perpetuated that mindset of LGBTQ bad, like, you know, people who don't promote, like, equality amongst races, stuff like that. Like, and I found that really interesting. But I wanted to sort of use that as a segue into our first question. Obviously, you run an organization which is trying to target disinformation and disintegrate the idea of spreading bad information on the internet, but have you ever came in contact with somebody who was promoting disinformation in the real world? And if so, like, what did you do in that moment?
Wow, what a good question. Okay, so first of all, I have family all over the world, and yes, I do come in contact with people who I disagree with. And one member of my family in particular, I would say, is, like, more extreme towards the kind of hateful views that I am looking to defund. And my answer to this is always that it's not about the general public. What our work does is defund the people at the very top. So at Check My Ads Institute, what we're doing is we're identifying the people who are making money, and I mean millions, off of things like the big lie or white replacement theory. Like, this is not a nuanced conversation that we have at Check My Ads. We are talking about the people who are leading all of these hateful views.
Talk me through a little bit more about how you get to targeting online ads as opposed to cable news, especially in light of the recent campaign you've been doing with Fox News, which I know there are stats that float around that say the vast majority of Fox's profits come from its cable division. So I'd be curious if you could walk us through that mindset of how you get to targeting ad exchanges.
So Check My Ads Institute is the ad tech watchdog. It's the first ad tech watchdog and the only ad tech watchdog that we know of that is looking at this $400 to $700 billion digital ad industry and saying, why is it funding the disinformation economy when advertisers have said they don't want to sponsor hate? And so what we do at Check My Ads is we look at who the people actually are, who the companies actually are, who are working in business relationships with the websites that are making money off of this kind of content, off of, for instance, election disinformation or racism. And the fact is that on cable, you have all these shows that, like Tucker Carlson, that plays once or twice, but on the internet, that content lasts forever, and it continues to be monetized by Fox News continuously. Now, it's not just about money. The ad tech industry also traffics in the personal identifiable information of all internet users. That is, they know your location, they know what you buy, they know who you're related to. It's like very invasive information, and propaganda outlets benefit enormously from targeting that kind of content to internet users. So they don't get the same kind of, I would say, like, tool set from cable as they do from being on the internet.
How would you say that, like, tech integrates into this whole process? Because initially I was thinking that your angle sort of promoted the idea that Fox News is the bad guy. Now I'm thinking ad agencies, now there's tech integrated into it. Who do we pinpoint?
So the people who we are targeting at Check My Ads Institute are the people who are saying one thing to advertisers. They're saying, don't worry, we'll never put your ads on content that promotes election disinformation. And then go and have business relationships with people who publish election disinformation. So advertisers, brands, like all the consumer products that we see on the internet in ads, they don't actually control where their ads are going. It's the ad exchanges that are like the traffic control of this industry. And so what we had to realize over time, and of course, you know, this was a process, is that we had to uncover what's happening in the ad tech, what we call the supply chain, in order to target exactly who is controlling the wallets and the data and the ads themselves. And that's the ad exchanges, those middlemen who place the ads.
Now, when you go for the ones with the deep pockets, I can imagine that that comes with a lot of contempt. And so I'd be curious if you've ever personally been attacked by some of those executives or had any, I don't even know if this would be the case, but hits against you for coming for very, as you described, $400 billion industry. That is no small chump, you know, of change.
We have a security team. They are active in waves. We take our security very seriously. The ad tech industry is, honestly, it's kind of a mixed bag. Like, they are sometimes really responsive. And they're like, oh, shoot, we didn't realize that we were monetizing Charlie Kirk, who's a millennial white nationalist and sent 80 buses to the insurrection. Whoops. Even though our supply policy says we don't work with publishers who seek to overthrow the government. Like, whoops, we monetized him for a whole year after the insurrection. Okay, fine. So they're responsive. We wish that they were responsive before we had to say anything. And then others have been outright hostile, and they haven't ever threatened us. The ad tech industry still has like a modicum of professionalism, but the disinformation sphere certainly publishes rampant disinformation about us. They call us George Soros-backed, which is part of a anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. They call us Antifa. They call us radical leftists, which, again, ridiculous, because honestly, we're just being pragmatic here, that real-world violence is bad for everyone, including corporate advertisers. And they even have gone so far as to call me a pedophile.
Wow. How do you cope with information like that that's thrown around? It seems like it's magnified, you know, that much further. I can only imagine, you know, as sort of kids are experiencing today with cyberbullying, you're experiencing that to the nth extreme. So how do you personally try and cope with that information, try and reconcile the difference?
I am learning about how to deal with it. We have an incredible team. Like, our security team is really helpful. Our mentors are really helpful. Sometimes we've had to involve lawyers and the police even. And we have resources and we know how to use them. We certainly take it seriously, and no one should be subjected to these threats. And the other thing that we do is we use it against them. It's literally how we got Dan Bongino demonetized. He had 12 ad exchanges before he found out about us, and then he decided to attack us, send all of his trolls to harass and stalk and call us all kinds of names. And we use that to get him even kicked off of Google Ads, which is really hard.
Wow. I have so many questions to follow up with that. But the first of which is, with great power comes great responsibility. Having the power to essentially dismantle a figure comes with a lot of responsibility. How are you able to manage that responsibility, and what processes do you have to ensure that what you're doing is proceeded in the correct way?
I love that, and I have a two-part answer. The first answer is that we're not the ones making these decisions. The ad exchanges are. We are pointing out that their supply policy is basically the list that says all the websites that they will not work with say one thing and their business practices say another. They don't want to have that uncovered to their advertising clients, because their advertising clients will go to other ad exchanges. It's a competitive market, and it's an opaque market. It's very hard to find out what is good and what is bad, like what companies have a good reputation or not. And so they depend enormously on their reputation. And that's why when we, I don't know, shine sunlight on these issues, they quickly respond and do the right thing. Again, we are not playing in the gray area. It's not like we're choosing people at random and being like, they're bad. These are people who have caused real world violence, death. We're not talking about gray area. Okay, my second thing is that, of course, we have power in this scenario. Everyone has power in this scenario. And Nandini and I, as the co-founders of Check My Ads, have chosen to become voices. And with a voice comes power. And I'm always speaking about this with my friends and mentors. And just yesterday, someone said, power without love is actually harmful. And so we always have to go into this conversation with compassion and thinking about who we're defending and who we're holding accountable. And the fact is that we are all human, and we have to take a stance that protects all of us. And that's why we are talking about the people who cause real world harm.
I can imagine that if these ads were ran in without success, it wouldn't be much of an issue. But from the looks of it, there seems to be such a high conversion rate to the alt-right pipeline. Why do you think that is?
So it's hard to tell if you're actually getting an ROI on digital ads at all. Like, it's high level. You're getting reports back that say, here's your click-through rate, here's your impression rate, and that's kind of it. Like, your CPM, your cost per 1,000 views. And it's really hard with those high level reports to even see if your campaign is, quote, doing well or not. That said, we know that clickbait that is hateful converts. And so we're talking about the disinformation economy, right? And when I say that, a lot of people think, oh, well, Facebook, you know, Cambridge Analytica, or that's where, you know, my aunt is radicalized. But Facebook is not where people who spread hate make money. They make money when users click on the links on Facebook and then go to the websites where a dozen or so ad exchanges are waiting to serve them ads. Because that's how the websites make money. That's how the publishers of this content makes money. And we know that this, what I call it hate bait, we know that that converts people. Like, it clicks. It makes people click on Facebook. That said, we don't know how much money is in this. It's estimated that the disinformation economy is about $2.6 billion, but we don't know, for instance, how much we took away from Dan Bongino when he lost all his ads. We know that it was a lot, but we don't know how much.
How does that affect you when you're going about thinking about say, KPIs, key performance indicators for your work, if it's that hard to target down what the actual effect is, how do you know if you've actually created?
We measure by how many ad exchanges are dropping the website. Okay. And we can estimate. So Nandini, my co-founder, she started a campaign in 2016 called Sleeping Giants, and they let advertisers know when their ads were on Breitbart. It was literally like tweeting at advertisers, and about 300,000 people ended up following the account, and like the general public was just letting advertisers know. Within 3 months, 4,000 advertisers had publicly said, thank you for letting us know. We do not want to be here. We are going to block Breitbart from our ad campaigns. So that's 4,000 advertisers. And then 31 of Breitbart's 35 ad exchanges dropped them. Steve Bannon himself, who was the editor at the time, he said that on camera, it was like for a documentary, he said, oh yeah, this group, Sleeping Giants, they took away 90% of our revenue. They were going to make $8 million in 2017, and they were going to use that money to expand to Germany and France. 90% of it just disappeared because of all those ad exchanges dropping them. And you can extrapolate that to Dan Bongino, Glenn Beck, Charlie Kirk, all these other websites. We can guess, and we know it's significant, but again, it's annoying that we can't tell.
Definitely. I want to double click on that because I've seen that clip. I was looking at it last night, and honestly, it was a harrowing experience to see, you know, basically that same campaign going to talk to you as well the next day, being spoken from someone who has done so much harm to the nation and, you know, more internationally, has done so much harm internationally. Right after he said that you guys had affected his bottom line basically by 90%, he also mentions that it is likely that most far-right organizations will need to go to a donor-based or subscription-based model. What do you think about in terms of the evolving landscape of this media ecosystem, and especially the disinformation ecosystem? Because if you are successful, it's possible that they can get money in different ways. So how do you think about effectuating change in that
capacity? It's so good you picked up on that. Ash, that is amazing. So he literally said right before he said that, I don't know if you remember, he said, without ads, there's no economic model.
Yep.
Fabulous. So what we're dealing with here is someone who now has to campaign their hate to the general public because their automated ATM has been broken. This ad system is like the ATM for the disinformation economy. They just sign up to ad exchanges and immediately get millions of dollars. That is wrong. As the ad tech watchdog, that's what we're addressing. And we reserve the right of people in America to exercise their free speech. We think that they should have the right to say what they want. And we think advertisers should have the right to stay the hell away from it. And right now, the ad exchanges are infringing upon that right. As for the sustainability models of these alt-right or extremist content publishers, I think they can do their best. But the fact is that most people are good, and most people don't want hate and violence in their communities. So I would like to see them struggle and continue to struggle.
I want to take a step back to sort of analyze, like, what are the pillars of support for these alt-right media and news networks. Obviously, when you take one away, the table is still standing. One leg has been gone in advertising, but what are the other three that keep it up?
So advertising, the ad tech system, again, gives ads, money, and data to these propaganda outfits. And if you're a propaganda outfit, you need three things. Okay, the data helps you target the people who are most susceptible to lies and disinformation. The ads, the money, of course, helps to sustain and grow your operations, but the ads give legitimacy. And I think that's really important to remember. So the ads themselves, like these blue chip advertisers, you know, Dove soap or cleaning products or shoes, they're actually there to show you on, like, if you're a propagandist, they're there to show you that they vet this publication, that it's an okay place for news. And when you're taking away that, what you called that one leg of the table, you're taking away basically the weapon that propaganda needs to legitimize themselves, grow their audience, and grow their operations. Awesome. That's a powerful leg. But you're right that you're also dealing with state-backed donors. Okay, we're like the Kremlin. And you're dealing with large-scale wealthy donors. And you're dealing with a small but, I would say, nefarious group of subscribers and monthly donors. And the fact is that we have to discuss this publicly all the time, and that it is a constant community effort to make sure that our family members and friends do not get sucked into the extremist rabbit hole that these people are providing for them, and to understand exactly what the myths that underpin these fascist and extremist leanings are. You know, they want to tell you that you are in danger. They want to tell you that you have to fight, that you have to take away your community and isolate yourself, because that's the only way to survive, that immigrants are dangerous, that people who look different to you are dangerous, that people who have done well and better than you are dangerous. They have all of these myths, and that is the premise upon which they justify violence and hate. And we can fight that if we understand it.
Definitely. Let's double click on that for a moment. I'm curious about best practices to engage in those conversations, you know, especially in light of the fact that your campaigns have been successful in the past and continue to definancialize far-right networks. People still continue to funnel themselves into those systems. So how do you stop your grandmother, your grandfather, your mom, your dad from continuing to go down the hate spiral?
That's a really hard question. And I think the answer that we are dealing with is that we can't do this en masse without dealing with the upstream issues, with the upstream economic incentives of this disinformation. I mean, if Charlie Kirk is your family member's go-to person for news and information, that's a problem. And he will only continue to do that so long as he is platformed by people who are otherwise reasonable. And introducing him to more and more people is exactly what the ad industry has been doing, and we need to stop it. We need to pull it back, because they desperately need attention. And so we all can do something to, on the one hand, show grandma love and attention and make sure that she's busy so she's not getting sucked into YouTube rabbit holes, you know, day after day because she's bored. And on the other hand, fight. You know, at Check My Ads, we have a system where we send email templates to anyone who signs up. And in those email templates, we give the names of ad tech executives, we give their email addresses, and we give the message template that says, hey, your supply policy says that you don't publish or you don't work with any publisher of election disinformation, but we are still finding your ads on Glenn Beck's The Blaze. So how are you going to address this? And how do you square that with your advertiser clients? And we have over 40,000 people now who have given us their email address so that they can send emails, because this system works. It's literally holding people accountable. And that's, I think, the most powerful thing we can do, at the same time as showing compassion for our family members.
To dive a little bit deeper, just talking from personal perspective, I remember, you know, searching on YouTube as a 17-year-old just trying to understand the world and falling into the trap of watching what I now consider to be alt-right perspectives or narratives. Like what Asher said earlier, there is an advertising push towards that. But how do we counter the algorithmic push towards alt-right, you know, personas?
It's a problem. It's a big, big problem. And the fact is that the algorithm is already bad. But the fact is these YouTube videos should not even be up there in the first place, because according to Google's own and YouTube's own terms of service, they break the terms of service. They shouldn't even be up there, let alone promoted to a 17-year-old boy. It's outrageous that they are turning a blind eye to their own rules. It's as if words mean nothing. And that's what we have to hold accountable.
How do you see disinformation presenting itself across different age groups? I mean, Joe, we're sort of creating this dichotomy already of old people and the way they get funneled in and young people. One might be advertising for old, algorithm for young. Do you think that that's an appropriate way of segmenting those groups? And if not, what ways do you see disinformation affecting different age groups in different ways?
One of the... Okay, the way I would like to answer this question is how we see different age groups being or causing real world harm. Okay, so the problem with disinformation is not disinformation is full of lies. The problem of disinformation is that it causes real world harm. And when we're looking at who to target with our campaigns, we're looking at four things. We're looking at, do they adhere to reality? Do they traffic in conspiracy theories? And are they pitting the reader against minority groups? And then do they adhere to the advertising standards that, like the ad tech standards that are written up on the supply chain by like associations? When we're looking at real world consequences, we're looking at mass shootings. We're looking at insurrections. We're looking at attacks on churches and mosques and pride parades, literal violence. And I think that we have to, in order to answer your question, we have to think about who's affected by, who is in power in politics and who is most violent in our communities. And I don't have the answer to those questions, but that's how I would address the question.
It seems as though it's kind of hard to pinpoint, though, as an outsider, like what were the motives behind a murder or a mass shooting. I find it difficult to understand like how you guys are able to discern, hey, Breitbart is the reason for this, or a different alt-right media or a news network is perpetuating this cycle of like shootings and violence and stuff like that. What is the process? Like, is there a structure for analyzing this so that we can effectively say, instead, all these people are using Dove soap, it must have been Dove soap that was the problem, you know? I'm trying to understand what paradigms are used to effectively outline disinformation that is harmful.
We have an enormous body of researchers whose job it is to identify common threads for mass violence events. I say we as in America. There are so many people who have taken it upon themselves to understand the psychology of people who turn to violence. And the fact is that we have the manifestos. We have the real news articles that say, you know, they were on these forums saying that they were going to do it because of these conspiracy theories right before they went and did the thing. So the evidence is there. It's not like it's a hard analysis. It's very obvious what is happening. And I think that pragmatism is backed by real world social science in a way that is indisputable. I mean, we know that radical extremism is causing radical violence. It's just a fact.
I want to double click again on one of the pillars you mentioned earlier of the four. That something matches reality. And this might come off as very esoteric, but I think that disinformation economy, as you've described, is what distorts people's reality. And so how do you navigate that difference in your understanding of reality and say the understanding of the reality of the person who's producing the content or who's consuming the content?
Yeah, that's the rub, isn't it? Because then you get into a question of, well, what is truth? Yep. And that is a philosophical problem of the ages. I mean, we've never put our finger on exactly what truth is, because that's the job of philosophers. Now, Chris Wallace was a Fox News anchor for years. He left Fox News earlier this year because he says he hit a wall. All of a sudden, he was like, listen, I can't do it anymore. January 6th was too far. Fox News has broken its audience members from reality. Now, this is a man who had bought into Fox News for decades. He was a figurehead of this propaganda outfit. And the fact is that reality exists. And truth, although something that philosophers will talk about endlessly, also, for the most part, exists, as do journalistic standards. Now, when the Post-Millennial, which is a Canadian disinformation rag, wrote about how my business partner was a radical Antifa extremist, there was no basis for that. When they wrote that I am a pedophile, there is no basis for that. No real basis whatsoever. We're talking about lies. And we all know what lies are. Now, why is it important that we adhere to a reality? It's because how fascism works is that when a population throws away the institution that gives us a shared reality, it opens up the opportunity for a charismatic leader to say, don't worry, I'll save you. Don't worry, I'll lead you, so long as you obey me. And by the way, your human rights don't matter, because we have to justify taking them away in order to save you and your families from this invisible threat that I invented. We have to, the way that we fight authoritarianism is that we adhere to reality, that we use our eyes and our ears to understand what is happening and to make sure that we don't lose sight.
Yeah, really well said. And I think you're also teasing out the almost psychological difficulties in this game. It's like people are playing with our most base stem lizard brain effects, right? Like, I have fear that someone will take my family away, take my food away, take my income away. And so it becomes this really difficult process of trying to resolve and try and fight your own psychology. It's like you're playing a game against yourself. I want to rope in sort of three of these last questions, which are a little bit more rapid fire, albeit I think they probably will take some time as well to think about. In the work that you do, what is something that you've recently changed your mind on?
That we don't have to pressure advertisers to do the right thing, because the marketers themselves, like the individuals who we speak to, are themselves concerned about gun safety, abortion rights, insurrections. They're finding it really difficult to do business in a media environment and in a community, I'm talking about America again, that is a minefield of important issues. And a lot of people who are in the disinformation economy, who these advertisers have been inadvertently supplying with ads, money, and data, they're actually the ones who are creating the problems for the advertisers, which are like the communication and PR issues. If there wasn't this issue, if there wasn't the disinformation economy, advertisers would actually have an easier time doing business, a less chaotic work week. And I think I've changed my mind about the role of corporations and the effect of disinformation on corporations. I've actually been very surprised at the conversations that I've had internally with these advertisers.
Love that. Moving into the second of those last three, what message would you impart to a captive audience of, say, Fox News listeners right now?
At risk of sounding naive, because of course, okay, you know, they don't love us. What I want to address more than anything is the sense of undue victimhood that Tucker Carlson is trying to give to his audience. He's trying to say, you're in danger. You're not. Everything's going to be okay. You don't have to rile yourself up against people who are just trying to survive in order to protect your so-called rights and freedoms that are not even being affected. Like, you don't have to feel the way that Tucker Carlson is trying to make you feel. You can step back and you can think through the reality of your experience. And I know that it's hard. I know gas prices are high. I know the politics in this country are atrocious. I know that we are struggling economically, and it's likely we're heading into a depression. Things are bad. But identifying who is in power and who should be held to accountability is our most important job here. And letting someone with a bad faith narrative answer those questions for you is a mistake.
Claire, things are bad, but what's giving you hope?
I think the most important thing to remember is that no matter how bad it gets, we will be in community with each other. We will have conversations that matter. We will always be able to do the best we can and optimize for self-respect. We're not optimizing to win some war. That's not what we're doing. We're optimizing so that when we're done, whenever done is, we can say we did our best. And I know within my community, within the Check My Ads larger community, the whistleblowers that we work with, the advertisers we work with, the ad exchanges who actually respond to us, there are good people trying very hard. That gives me hope.
Claire Atkin from Check My Ads, thank you so much for coming on the show. How can people plug into your world?
Our website is checkmyads.org/fox. That's where you can put in your email address to get those email templates. And we have a newsletter that you can subscribe to on checkmyads.org. Otherwise, you know, we're on TikTok, Check My Ads, Instagram, Check My Ads, and Twitter @checkmyadshq.